What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer, and you have just stepped into my captain's quarters, my weekly gaming update show where I talk about my favorite gaming news topic of the past week, discuss what games I've been playing, give tips on some of those games, as well as issue a weekly relevant gaming-related decree. This week, it's all about two new indie game announcements that have me excited for their future, so let's talk about it and dive right into the episode in my news catch of the week. Gamers, I have two brand new game announcements that happened this past week that I am super stoked to share with you and to discuss. Now, the first one that I have to talk about is a game called American Arcadia, and it's developed by Out of the Blue Games. And the reason why I have to talk to you about this one first, Out of the Blue Games is the developer who designed and developed Call of the Sea. Now, if you haven't played that game, go do it right now. I absolutely loved this game. So way back in December of 2020, Call of the Sea released, and let me just say it absolutely blew me away. If you want my detailed thoughts on it, definitely go check out my review for it. It was up for my Game of the Year that year. Did it win? You'll have to check out my 2020 A Gaming Year in Review episode to find out. But needless to say, Out of the Blue Games, amazing developer, really impressed me with what they did with Call of the Sea. So of course, this past week, as soon as I heard mentioned that it was their next game, I was all over it. Unfortunately, we only got a 30-second teaser trailer. Didn't really show us much of anything in this trailer, except for the visual style of the game, which looked pretty cool. It was kind of a same similar style as Call of the Sea, not quite cel-shaded, not quite realistic, but a very nice blending of the two, if that makes sense. Now, American Arcadia itself is set in the town of Arcadia, which is this kind of a 70s retro futuristic metropolis, and the residents of this utopia, these guys are used to living a life of luxury and comfort. They are completely unaware that they are being recorded 24/7 and that their lives are being broadcast around the world as its most watched reality TV show. Now, I don't know about you guys, but if you've ever seen the movie The Truman Show, it sounds very familiar here. Now, the real caveat to all that luxury and comfort is this, though. A drop in popularity ratings comes at a pretty high cost, the cost being your life. Now, the purpose for we as the player is to control two alternating characters as they attempt to escape from this nightmare and uncover the mystery of Arcadia in the process. Now, this mesh of genres here, puzzle, platformer, it's going to be great. The story will be presented in the form of a documentary with interviews and police interrogations popping up as you progress. And the gameplay, it's going to be from a 2.5D action side-scroller perspective, which includes challenging platforming action, breathtaking chases, stealth, and puzzles, quote-unquote. Now, in addition to the 2.5D action piece of the game, the other character is going to be played from a full 3D first-person perspective. You're going to have hacking and exploration, stealth elements, and, of course, puzzles to solve. And these first-person segments, guys, they look to be my favorite, going off of just what I've seen so far in the trailer. So two characters, two totally different styles of gameplay for each, a unique world, and guys, I'm already looking for somebody to take my money. Please, take it now. Unfortunately, we did not get a release date, which probably means that we're looking at a 2023 release, which I'm okay with. Look, Out of the Blue, they're great. I've already been proven to by them before. I have every confidence that once the game releases, it'll be an awesome experience. But that was only the first of two games this past week that I wanted to discuss with you. The second game that had an announcement was none other than Arctic Awakening. And this game is developed and published by Goldfire Studios, and it's going to be a first-person narrative adventure. And guys, I don't know if you've seen it yet online or not, but it has immediately already drawn comparisons to other survival first-person narrative-driven adventure game, Firewatch. Now, if you've never heard of Firewatch, you're basically a fireman in the woods and you use your compass and all kinds of stuff. Really interesting, intriguing game that I've always wanted to try out. And even though it's on Game Pass, for some reason, I have still not tried it out. Nonetheless, it's drawn a lot of comparisons, Arctic Awakening, that is, to Firewatch. Now, you play as character Kai, a pilot, who, with his co-pilot Donovan, they're on this routine supply drop to an Alaskan town when all of a sudden this storm comes out of nowhere, rips the plane in half, and takes Donovan with it, as well as crashing the other half that you're in as Kai into the frozen wilderness of the Arctic. Now, at this point, it's up to you as the player and Kai to explore and survive the frozen wilderness while searching for Donovan and a way home. Now, guys, the part I'm excited about is the answer to what's making what are supposedly weird noises that only come after dark. So you guys know me, if you've been listening to me for a while, I love paranormal, supernatural, horror type stuff. So any excuse for there to be a part of that in a game story, I am all there. I am all about mystery, so I can't wait. Now, in addition to just exploring the wilderness and surviving and figuring out the mystery, you are going to have a companion with you during this exploration. And it's a court-mandated therapy bot that looks to give you light in the darkness while you explore, you know, essentially your flashlight, and just kind of give you that sense of having somebody else being there with you. You don't have that complete sense of isolation and being alone. Now, I don't yet know the full extent of the gameplay options that this companion bot may or may not provide, but I am really anxious to find out if there's more to this bot than just kind of being there and showing a light through the darkness. Now, outside of exploring the Arctic environment, which is itself a character with quote-unquote dynamic weather that affects your play across extremely varied environments, you are going to also meet other potential companions, and you're going to have the opportunity to affect those relationships with them by selecting dialogue choices, as well as being left with major decisions that you have to make that are going to affect the outcome of the game. Now, the trailer itself was very short, but the first thing that stood out to me, again, of course, were the visuals. And again, you know, it was beautiful graphics and beautiful visuals, very crisp. Again, they weren't really cel-shaded, but they had this sort of a look of a painting to them, which I thought was really cool. We see very random things like Kai making a fire, exploring the wilderness, trying to flag down passerbys that are in the air, to no avail. And the trailer closes with Kai cresting this hill to see a deep ravine below him. And there's this very otherworldly structure that's at the ravine's center. And there's this giant circular opening with a red glow coming out of it. And this may be what possibly took your plane down. I don't know yet, but I can't wait to find out. And the underlying mystery of what is going on and what's in this wilderness is what has me intrigued, as well as the survival and exploration aspects of the gameplay. I played The Forest for a few hours, absolutely loved that style of gameplay. So if we're looking at The Forest gameplay combined with this mystery again, like The Forest had with its mutant inhabitants on that island, I'm very, very intrigued, to say the least. Now, again, no specific date has been given for Arctic Awakening's release, but as of right now, we did at least get a 2023 window. Guys, I can't wait to see more on either of these games, and I will definitely keep you posted if I do end up checking them out and playing them and give you my detailed thoughts as always. Speaking of those detailed thoughts on what I'm playing, let's open up my captain's log and see what I've been up to these past 2 weeks. Gamers, as stated, it has been 2 weeks since I've released a Captain's Quarters episode. So that means I've had 2 weeks of gaming progress that I now have to discuss with you, and I can't wait. Now, the first game up I want to discuss is a new one that I checked out over the course of these last 2 weeks, and that game is Lost in Random. It's developed by Zoink Games and published by EA, and it was released last September. But it just recently dropped on Game Pass, so I decided to check it out. You know, it's one of those games where I'd seen it numerous times in the PlayStation Store, the Xbox Store, looked at the screenshots, the trailer, constantly debated whether or not I wanted to get it. And you know what? Lo and behold, a few months patience, and it's on Game Pass, so it kind of paid off. Now, I did only play about 2 hours of this game, but I got to tell you, it was a really, really enjoyable 2 hours. Immediately, I was hooked on the design style of this game. If you look at it, if you look it up online, see images, it immediately screams a Tim Burton style. And I love that Tim Burton design style. Anytime it's used, whether it's games, movies, whatever, I love it. So I was very interested in the game's story as it started and kind of giving you a premise and an idea of what you're supposed to be doing and the motivation behind things in this game. But I did start out a little bit worried. I'm not going to lie. There was an immediate combat scenario that's kind of like a dream sequence that you start out in, and the game just kind of drops you in there, and they give you specific direction of combat moves or button prompts, and I did those, but I got to tell you, it was extremely bad, the combat, that is. There was no lock-on. There was no sense of collision detection, and it was just very wonky. And I was like, oh man, I am not going to like this game, which really sucks because I want to, just based on the design style, the way the story is going. Well, bear with me. So after that initial combat sequence was over, you know, I started out the game and kind of got an understanding of the main character, whose name is Even. And she is this young 11-year-old. And it pretty much starts out, the story does, with her sister Odd being taken away in the beginning of the game. And essentially, that is the motivation that drives Even to go get her sister back. And yes, you are hearing that correctly. The sisters are Even and Odd, which I thought was awesome. Now, Onecroft is the town in which Even and Odd and her parents live, and that's where you start the game. And I thought one other cool thing that was unique about this game is there are 6 different levels, essentially, in the game, and each one is a different town or village or city. In this case, Onecroft is the first one that you go to. And each world being number related, I thought was cool. So 2 is Two Town, 3 is Threedom, so on and so forth. Now, Onecroft is the lowest of the lowest class. And it was a very dark, dank, and murky feeling harbor town. But I loved it because the design of the world was done so well that it really drew me in and made me just smell that harbor air, where if you've ever been on the docks and you've been smelling that wonderful ocean air, and I say that sarcastically because, oh man, now out in the open ocean, sure, but right there around the docks and just it was very much drawing me in as I explored the town of Onecroft. And, you know, the residents, they were a lot of fun to talk to as well. You can talk to anybody that has an icon above them and get some information about the city and explore different areas around the city, like Even's room, as well as different taverns or whatnot. And you can find out a little bit of backstory about all these things as you're going through. Nothing too crazy or over in depth. And that's one thing I liked about it is it's not necessarily a directly linear experience, but there's very little for you to kind of go off the beaten path to. And I kind of appreciate that after spending so much time in so many massive scale games. You know, it is nice to kind of dial it back a little bit and just, you know, kind of enjoy the experience and the story as the focal point for the most part of the gameplay, the tight-knit gameplay specifically. But as I explored and the tutorials were coming hot and heavy, you know, I loved taking in the visuals of the tea kettle houses and kind of the wibbly wobbly docks and just really unique architecture that Onecroft had to it. And towards the end, we get some stealth gameplay elements that came into play, and the use of Even's slingshot is definitely crucial, I would say, for smashing pots and crystals at a distance. Then you get currency in the game that you can use and different items and such. But there was also some storybook page collectibles that I did enjoy going after as well. These were usually hidden behind a pretty cool platforming puzzle of some sort. And really the only other area that I went to in this 2 hours, there was an island that you go to after Onecroft. And you end up meeting your main companion for the game, Dicey. And I loved Dicey. Gotta tell you, he was such a cool addition and adds just a lot of personality to the complement of Even. And it was once you get Dicey that the combat, I was able to finally, after this sequence, breathe a sigh of relief and say, okay, It is not broken. This is actually halfway decent and a lot of fun. So looking at Lost in Random, just by screenshots and the trailer, I had a very preconceived understanding of what the combat was going to be like and dice rolls and cards and all that. It's not exactly what I thought it was going to be, which is a good thing for me because I'm not necessarily typically drawn to that style of combat. But in this game, it was a lot of fun. Everything is random, which is why it's called Lost in Random, right? And random is the name of the world overall. But it's just so cool how everything is tied back in thematically to randomness and dice and numbers. And again, it's the same thing with the combat. When you look at the combat, you get a certain hand of cards that you have in your possession at the time. And based on those cards that you have and the buildup of your meter that you've built up based on your regular melee combat, you can use specific number of cards because each card costs a different point value to use. And it can be different basic things like pulling a sword and equipping a sword for even for a small duration of time or using a potion to heal even, just different things like that. There was a lock-on option that comes into play here. Like this is the full-on tutorial for combat on this island once you get dicey and you're really getting into it. And I just really appreciated in a very short amount of time the complexity, but the also just the ease of use within the combat of the game. And man, it was a lot of fun fighting my way and getting through towards the end of this island stage, if you will. And I can't wait to see more of what this game offers. That's essentially where I got to, but it was a lot of fun. And I highly recommend checking the game out. If you have Game Pass, absolutely. Even on PlayStation, if I'm not mistaken, it was on their spring sale at half off. I want to say for $10 to $15, somewhere in that range. And I would say just what little bit I played of it already, I could tell you, yeah, I would say it was worth $10 to $15 for sure. So either way, no matter what console you have, definitely give it a shot. I think it's worth checking out. Now, the bulk of my playtime over the course of this past 2 weeks, if you've been listening to me, you know exactly where I'm going here. And we're going to the Forbidden West. Gamers, over the past 2 weeks, I was able to log in 21 hours with Aloy. That has put my total playtime over 100 hours. I crossed the 100-hour mark in this game. Yet another game where I have dropped 100-plus hours into its world. Specifically, 107 hours. Now, percentage complete-wise, I am right there at 49% complete. So I am just shy of being officially 50%, therefore halfway complete with this game. And, you know, throughout the course of play, I am the controller freak. So I love my controllers. I love the DualSense controller. Best controller on the market. My favorite controller. And I did alternate playing with the Midnight Black, Galactic Purple, and Cosmic Red DualSense controllers throughout my experiences. And guys, most of what I did this past 2 weeks, believe it or not, was side quest related and exploration focused. Now, I will tell you, just as a suggestion, if you remember when I last left you, I had just completed the main quest that ended in the Bulwark. Now, that was out in this snowy northern type area, right? Just past the jungles area that I had passed on the way to the Bulwark. Well, once I finished that main quest, I'm going to tell you and suggest checking out a lot of the main villages and towns that you've come across throughout the course of play. Because I realized in Plainsong, Riverhem, and Scalding Spear that after completing the Bulwark main quest missions, there was about 6 side quests that unlocked, and you can pick up from all 3 of these cities. And all of them, of course, were great. I have not gone through and completed a bad side quest in this game so far. They have all been just top-notch, awesome, many side stories, fleshing out the world, fleshing out even the different tribes and the different types of people in this world. You have the Oseram, the Tanakhth. There's just so many different variations on culture and people in this game world, and I love seeing every aspect of it. Now, also back at the Memorial Grove, which is in the jungle area that you pass on the way to the Bulwark, there was also some new side quests there as well. And one of those, it involved getting the arena opened. You had to do a few specifics out in the game world in order to come back and have the right things they needed for you to unlock the arena. And I'll be honest with you guys, I did that quest first because I really wanted to see what this arena was all about. So I saw it through to completion, the quest to open the arena. And once the arena was open, before I went jumping right in there, I did notice that right outside the gates of the arena, a new vendor had opened up. And she was offering some amazing looking gear, whether it's outfits or weapons. Man, I mean, these were just like next level. They were awesome. And to be honest with you, I've been wearing the same outfit at level 2 for the majority of my playtime because no outfits I've come across in any of the subsequent cities that I've unlocked or gone to, none of those vendors have had anything comparable or above what I am currently and have been wearing for the longest time. So to see how much disparity there was between the ones that she was offering here at this new vendor and what outfit I've been wearing all this time, it was like, wow, how do I get this? I want this outfit. Well, guys, this vendor only deals in the currency of medals that you earn from completing challenges in the arena. So, okay, all right, cool. 54 medals for this outfit that I want, no problem. Let's go to the arena. Let's see what these challenges are all about. Let's see what I got to do. So I go to the arena, talk to the person at the gates, boom, brings up the screen. And there's different tiers of challenges, of course. You have beginner, intermediate, master, and expert. Obviously, I'm not going to jump all the way to expert. We're going to start, and you got to unlock these tiers anyway. So I start with beginner, and you do have the option to look and see what the challenge is. Unfortunately, the challenge is you have to complete the preceding challenge before you can unlock the next one. Now, you don't have to get and beat the time required to get your medals for the specific challenge to unlock the next challenge. You just have to complete it. But here's my thing. These challenges, even on beginner, and guys, I consider myself, hey, look, I feel pretty confident in myself when it comes to combat, the weapons and different traps and items and bombs that I use. I feel pretty confident when it comes to confronting machines at this point in the game. 107 hours in, right? I better be. So I go to the first challenge, and it wasn't too bad. You go to the second challenge, a little bit more annoying, but still not terrible. Long story short, we get to the final challenge of the beginner set. And this is against a Slitherfang, the giant Cobra-esque machine. Okay, fine, whatever. I've faced them out in the wild before at Slitherfang sites. I've faced them a couple times in the main story progression. Fine, Slitherfang, got it. Got to defeat it within this time limit to get the medal. Well, guys, Guerrilla Games, the developer, did something I did not like. It's one of those things in games, I hate it when they do this. All the challenges before this in the beginner set, I was able to use all, have access to all of my bombs, my weapons, everything. Well, in this final challenge of the beginner set, they limit you to a specific set of weapons and items. And I was furious. So you have to not only defeat the Slitherfang in or under the time limit, but you also have to defeat it using only the items they provide you. And I thought that was just not cool. I did not like that at all. I was so frustrated because, of course, two out of the three things they're really giving you to play around with are things that I don't really play around with that much. The bolt casters, I'm not really big on those. So I don't have them upgraded that high. And it just wasn't really my weapon of choice. So I was frustrated that I was forced to use items that I didn't necessarily want to use. Ultimately, I pulled out the win. I got the Slitherfang defeated within the right time limit, got the medals. But guess what? It only gave me just barely over half of the medals needed to get those 54 in order to get that armor that I wanted from the vendor. So at this point, I decided, nah, I am not going to go forward with trying to do this arena right now. Maybe later in the game, towards the end, I'll come back. And if I feel I'm pretty maxed out on a lot of stuff or just in a very good spot, I'll try it again. But for now, I am moving forward. Now, I got to tell you that, you know, I also, in addition to all this, I completed a lot of jobs that I had created for myself, which involved hunting down specific machine parts that I needed for weapon and outfit upgrades. But my main area of conquest during this play period, though, was that of the area known as the Still Sands. Now, this area is the southernmost area in that middle part of the world map, just below the dry urine. And honestly, guys, it is arguably my favorite area yet in the game. And I'll tell you why in my highlight of the week in a little bit, the next segment. But while I was in the still sands, guys, I completely defogged that area, highlighted all the icons along the way, took out multiple rebel outposts and a rebel camp as well. I did meet up with another Oseram salvage camp, and it's part of a game-long multi-part side quest that leads to what I think is going to be the creation of the best outfit in the game. And guys, I can't wait for that. I cannot wait. I get so excited every time there's new outfits available to me. This is very exciting. I just hope I'm not disappointed. So all four of those quests related to that salvage, oh man, I love them. They were all great. I found them each uniquely crafted, and as well as taking me all over the sanded area, exploring the old world ruins as I came across them. Man, they were just extremely well placed and well done. And I got to tell you, as I was exploring, there's a lot of details that I love that Guerrilla Games put in this game just for Aloy. And what I mean is, say for instance, if you're sprinting and you're running, Aloy actually gets exasperated and starts breathing heavy. If you stop after you've been sprinting and you pan the camera around and you look at her face, she's sitting there. Her eyes are a little wide and she's kind of huffing and puffing, and the way her facial mouth movements are going, oh man, it's just, it's insane. It's awesome. In addition to that, there's also sweat that beads on her face as she's out there in the desert. And it's just little details like that I just picked up on and absolutely love those kinds of details in any game I play. Now, ultimately, I completed everything there was to do in the Still Sands, except for one final thing. The main story quest to find Poseidon, which is the next subordinate function that I needed for the main quest. So there's three subordinate functions you got to track down. I'd already found the first one up to this point. So next up is Poseidon. So at this point, I did begin that quest, which led me to the Tower of Tears. I made some new friends while I was here. But the highlight for me, guys, I finally got the diving mask, which is the special gear allowing you to breathe underwater. I have been wanting this special gear since the trailer over a year and a half ago for Horizon, when it showed her swimming underneath the water. And oh man, I am finally able to say that I have it and I no longer have to worry about coming up for air. And let me just say, you know, I did continue from here on the quest that took me to this underwater city. And guys, that's where I'm currently at. It's so amazing. It is just absolutely amazing. If you know me, if you listen to the show for a while, I love swimming underwater in video games. Love it. I love it in real life too. But because of that, it translates into the gaming space. And man, how awesome is it for me to just sit there underwater and just explore for roughly, so far this morning, I want to say it was close to 2 hours. I was just underwater, just exploring this underwater city. And it was amazing visually, sound-wise. There was just this feeling of tranquility. And I loved it. And the other really cool thing for me too is I was so drawn in that when I did get to a point after a while that I finally got out of the water and was walking around again as Aloy, it was very disorienting, which I thought was pretty cool, because it's the same if you ever swam a lot before or stayed underwater a lot. There is that sense of disorientation when you get out of the water. And man, I don't know, just little details. Absolutely love my time in this game this past 2 weeks. 21 hours. I cannot wait to get back into the world again and just keep going and keep discovering new areas, new gear, new weapons. Horizon Forbidden West, guys, an absolutely amazing experience. But out of all of that that I did this past week, what was my highlight of the week? Let's go find out the specifics now. Gamers, after being so excited of finally getting the diving mask, what could possibly have beaten that out as my highlight of the week? Well, it's very simple. Exploring the desert. Exploring specifically the Still Sands. Because, yeah, there's been desert areas before so far in this game. There was the Dry Urn, and the first area when you come out of No Man's Land that was very much a desert area. But it was something about these Still Sands, this southernmost part of that middle part of the map, that was just amazing. Part of it, I'll be honest, was the Vegas Strip. When you're going through, when you just come across this area and you see all these submerged buildings that are just broken down and dilapidated and decrepit, and they're buried, most of them, you know, 10 stories out of 20 in the sand. It's just something really awesome. It sends so many endorphins and triggers to my brain that I was excited so much while I was exploring these areas, seeking out green shine and all the different caches of treasure and different things that you can find, as well as secret areas with fire gleam. And guys, it was just amazing. Coming across different machines, tracking down machine parts, going through the desert on the back of my Fire Bristleback. I got to tell you, that's one thing that I have not done a whole lot of in this game. But when I do it and I'm really just sitting there, there was something about being out in the desert, mounted on the back of a Fire Bristleback and just riding around. The speed, the wind in Aloy's hair, I could just feel that warm air and just really taking in the environment and coming across certain machines and fighting them off with my Fire Bristleback. There was just so many really cool moments that I came across as I was going through the Still Sands. Potentially one of my favorites was the Still Sands Relic Ruin. It was this massive building that was just a beautiful structure at one point. It was obvious. And when you get inside, you know, the Relic Ruins, there are specific ones throughout the course of the game. And as I had mentioned before, the payoff for figuring out the puzzle of the environment is an ornament, is what it's called. And basically, you are following and tracking this group of friends' journey across the country. And I love seeing the little story tidbits each time you get to the ornament of that specific Relic Ruin. But it wasn't just the Relic Ruin itself, it was also the puzzle that was tied to it. I absolutely loved the puzzle. I thought it was ingenious. And it took me a minute, I ain't gonna lie, to figure it out. But I felt so proud when I figured it out. And that's also what added to this highlight of the week aspect of it is, you know, it feels good when you figure out a tough puzzle on your own. And it was just such a cool solution and one that wasn't immediately, at least to me, apparent. And man, I just got to tell you, just be on the lookout for the Still Sands Relic Ruin. It's a blast. So that was my highlight of the week, exploring the Still Sands. Now let's go open up my buried treasure gaming chest and see what gaming tips I have for you in Horizon Forbidden West. Gamers, I feel like just about every week I'm playing Horizon, I find and discover something new that I didn't click with before. And so that's why I feel the need. I've got to share it with you guys. I've talked a lot about combat in my most recent buried treasure tips week to week, and it doesn't change this week. This episode, I want to talk to you about weapon stamina and weapon techniques and the importance of them in any, honestly, combat encounter, but more specifically, really, when you're dealing with machines. Now, when you ask, what is weapon stamina? Well, there is this orange gauge bar that's on the lower right of the screen. And what happens is it will deplete when you use a weapon technique. How do you use a weapon technique, you may ask? Well, you do this by holding L2 to ready a weapon, and then you press R1. And at that point, you're going to be able to use any unlocked techniques that you may have for that specific weapon equipped. Now, some of my favorites or most recommended weapon techniques for you guys. First up, my favorite one of all is the focused shot for the sharp shot bow. And what this does, it allows you to increase your weapon's zoom while you aim, and then you fire this massively powerful shot that deals a ton of damage, a lot more than it usually would with just a regular shot. And I got to tell you guys, it has come in handy so many times for me when it's come time to infiltrate a rebel outpost or camp. You know, you got all those rebel sharpshooters and whatnot that are spread around, or honestly, even the rebel leaders. A lot of times you can take them out, even the masks. I know a lot of rebels, they wear the masks and you have to break them first. Hey, look, one shot breaks a mask and usually you can get another focused, zoomed in shot built up and readied before they alert everybody. And if you time it and set it correctly, bam, two shots. And they're gone, and you're still going in stealth mode. So loved focus shot for the sharp shot bow. Another one is triple notch for the bow. It's for the warrior bow, and this one allows you to load up three arrows and fire them at once. So if you're trying to be really quick with ripping and tearing off different machine parts on machines, that is a very highly recommended skill as well. And then last but not least this is really awesome, the penetrating rope for the rope caster. Now what this does, it'll attach to any part of an enemy, even onto armor, without the need to fully draw the weapon first. So if you played the game and you've used the rope caster, you'll know what I'm talking about. Typically, you have to fully draw the rope caster for a shot to count at attempting to latch onto an enemy. Well, with this penetrating rope technique, you don't need to fully draw. You just have, all you have to do is get it aimed, set your sights where you want to, and fire, and you're good to go. So I absolutely love the weapon techniques, and I've been sleeping on them, honestly, for the majority of this game. It's really been recently that I've started to wake up to, oh crap, here's yet another aspect of combat that I have not been taking advantage of. So do not sleep on weapon stamina and the weapon techniques that you can use that stamina towards. Now let's go check out this week's Captain's Decree. Gamers, as much as I love depth in a game, and as much as I love a massive amount of content, 100 plus hours, this week's Captain's Decree is this. Sometimes there can be too much of a good thing. Now, specifically what I'm referring to is the amount of content in Forbidden West, and I'm going to even throw in there a much-loved game of the past, the recent past, Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Now, these games both have taken massive amounts of my time, and, you know, I've loved the majority of all of that time between the two of them. But playing both games, I noticed the same thing. They both have just this massive amount of content, but it wasn't always and isn't always necessary. Specifically to Forbidden West, I'm playing that currently, and my God, I feel an overabundance of weapons. I just feel there's just too many weapons. You know, it was a lot simpler in Zero Dawn, and look, I get the idea and the thought process of, hey, sequel, we go bigger, we go bolder, more. I get it, but again, within reason. I mean, there are so many different types of weapons, not just the class, but then you also have the amount of weapons within the class. It's just insane when we're talking about Forbidden West here. And then you add on to that the fact that it's not just about using shards anymore, the currency, the base currency in Forbidden West. But now we're going to have you, you know, speaking as Guerrilla, the developer, now we're going to have you as the player. You're going to not only need the shards, but you also are going to have in certain items that you can purchase, you're also going to need a specific resource or two. Like, instead of just buying a bow for 200 shards, nah, you need 200 shards and a blue jay feather. What? Like, what? Why do I need these resources? Or at the very least, have the option for me to buy those resources from the vendor who's selling me the weapon. Because that way I don't have to go out into the world and seek out a blue jay. I mean, it's just, it's crazy to me. Why are we adding that layer to the bartering system here in the game? It's completely unnecessary to me. And just when you look at the different icons on the map of Forbidden West, even Valhalla, there is just so much there that they really, both Ubisoft and Guerrilla Games, and there's other games out there too, but in gaming in general, I feel like we're at a point where, all right, developers, there for the longest time, yes, everybody wanted more, bigger worlds, more to do, everything. Ah, let's longevity, more. Okay, but I feel we're at a point where, hey, I think we've passed that ceiling of what was the right amount of more, and now we're just getting a little excessive. So even though I am a person who loves to spend a ton of time in games and loves losing myself to the world, and you know, I always love to have a lot of content, guys, sometimes there can be too much of a good thing. That'll do it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by searching for Hulking Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks. Reach out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com or find me on social media on Instagram at lostatseagaming as well as on Twitter at lostatseagamin, the number one. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.